Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Glad to have you come for another D Word Podcast. Now, the best activities for people living with dementia are often those which require a little thinking outside the box. The traditional programmes mostly involve inside activities, which may not be a good fit for people who have spent the majority of their time outside. That's where my guest on this edition comes in. Rebecca Churchyard has set up Canada's first care farm for people living with dementia in Guelph, Ontario. Rebecca, it's great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Plenty in common because you're now living in Guelph, Ontario, which is somewhere that I know very well and like very much. And we are going to be talking about some care farms, which to some people may be a little bit of a new concept. Give us just a little idea about the care farm movement.
Absolutely. So in Canada, which is where Guelph, Ontario is, I founded the first care farm for people with dementia. But globally, we have thousands of care farms. The majority of care farms across the globe are geared for people with intellectual differences or disabilities. They can serve many different populations. Most of the time, care farms are supporting people who need a little bit of extra help before they enter the workforce. So skills building to enter the workforce, a bit of a training opportunity in a safe and supported setting on a farm. In our case, the program for people with dementia is more therapeutic, social, and recreational, a chance for somebody with dementia to be outdoors while their care partner gets a much needed break as they drop them off and pick them up. So the care farming movement itself is vast. I couldn't explain it to you in the time that we have today, but kind of a brief overview is it's groups of people who need a little bit of support that are on a operational farm and they're achieving something, accomplishing something together, whether that's a dairy farm, a wheat farm, or in our case, we have a pick your own fruit and vegetable farm and a sensory garden.
Yeah, so you know the link with dementia as well with you. Where did the link come from?
Yeah, so my grandpa, he was diagnosed with dementia when he was 63 years old, and my grandpa was an amazing man. I have so much respect for them, my grandparents, and he was a Christmas tree farmer, a business owner, and a teacher. He started the outdoor education programs at Fergus High School. That might be testing your local knowledge of Guelph too much. So Fergus is about 20 minutes away from Guelph. It's very small. So he was always outside in my childhood, thinking back to what we were doing together. Always outside, always working on things. That was a massive part of his identity. And my grandma, his wife, became his primary care partner. And so as I was growing up, entering university, I was witnessing their change as a couple as they adapted to this diagnosis. And lots of your listeners will know a dementia diagnosis is a diagnosis for the whole family. Lots of things change. It's not just the person, the family dynamics, everything changes, right? So my family went through that and he was quite young. When it came to getting respite for him and my grandma, it was challenging. Most of the programs were indoors. They were kind of focused on things that I might like or my grandma would like arts and crafts and singing and, you know, current events, that sort of thing. My grandpa wasn't a big fan of those things, so he wasn't very happy going to those programs. He wasn't happy at all, really. And so that created a lot of tension for my grandparents and giving my grandma a break and giving my grandpa the experiences that he enjoyed throughout his life, being outdoors, working outdoors. So they both passed away in the same year. My grandma passed away first, which is not uncommon for a lot of people who are familiar with how caregiving can be sometimes. She wasn't able to take care of her health as much as we wanted her to. And after they passed away, I had started my master's the same year, 2 weeks later after grandpa died, in social work and gerontology. And that's when I really started looking for something different. So actually in gerontology, life course theory, it's the timing and sequence of events. And I really see that theory come alive in my own life where I went to school, right? Graduate studies. I'm no longer caregiving for my grandpa or my grandmother. Both passed away, but I am motivated, filled with grief and sadness of their experience and wanting to do something different with those sort of rose-colored glasses that you have when you're 25, which I had at least. So I learned about care farms in a conference presentation, Dr. Simone de Bruin from the Netherlands, which is where I really based my care farm off of the Dutch model. I'd say 100% off the Dutch model. That's where I really kind of narrowed in on a lot of the literature. And Dr. de Bruin was kind enough to meet with me a few times. And one of my amazing advisors, Martin Fisher, he was the head of the Dutch Federation of Care Farmings for some time, also just has been so generous with his time and helping me start. But it took about 8 years of research and reading and reading and reading and reading and reading and reading and then planning and then taking a project management professional designation because they don't really teach you about, business and social work. So all of those steps that led to me founding the Care Farm in 2021. That's when we incorporated as a social enterprise, which is a social purpose business.
Well, that enthusiasm is coming across loud and clear. And by the way, I do know Fergus because
You do.
I've been to the brew pub in Fergus a couple of
Of
times.
course.
Yeah, so yeah, so I know it quite well. So you came out with all this enthusiasm, all this drive, but
Yeah.
how do you turn that into something physical, into a gear farm, and with probably people saying, you want to do what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I talked about it a whole lot, and I didn't get a whole lot of people saying, well, this is a silly idea. Like, I think everybody kind of thought, yeah, geez, why do we lock people with dementia inside? I mean, I understand why from the safety perspective, but gosh, shouldn't there be a different way? We have all these other services and supports and things we're building. What's wrong with the outdoors? And of course, it really comes down to that risk tolerance perspective. And if folks are willing to choose to be at risk of exposure to the elements, right, of the uneven terrain of the farm ground, it might storm, thunderstorm, lightning, and then what will we do? So it also took the right partner. I'm very grateful for Andrew's Farm Market and Winery in Milton, and they were willing. Of course, we're always prototyping, we're always testing, but they were willing to be the test site. So that's my farm partner, which was, integral for the inception of the concept. It also, I was very motivated by, when somebody passes away and they're important to you, I think you're willing a bit more to try. At least I was. I'm willing to put myself out there. The worst possible scenario is that it failed. Okay, it failed. I lost some money. Whatever. Pick up, move on, do something else clinically in geriatrics. So I had to be willing and ready to fail. And of course, to be on a platform where I'm judged and people are kind of testing out their own thinking and what I'm doing. And that's kind of uncomfortable sometimes. But I think once I accepted that that was going to happen and I would be okay, then I was able to continue. It wasn't super easy. And to your point, I had to learn a lot about developing a business. And I've been very, very fortunate. I've had several mentors who have helped me along the way, helping me form business plans. Help me understand and then form business plans, teaching me about the value of budgets and a million other things. But I know this wasn't part of your question. I have to say it. The thing that keeps me going, I see my grandparents and the people we support all the time. At least just a couple days ago, presenting in the community, I see them all the time. People who are struggling with this and good, hardworking people, just like my grandparents, who need an intervention like this. So that always renews it for me, right? To see people are going through something they went through. That's what keeps me going for sure, is that it's a hopeful thing when it comes to dementia. There's so much bad news when it comes to dementia, and this isn't bad news.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Back to my guest on this edition, Rebecca Churchyard. Yeah, and no, this is very positive news. And I think you're right. I mean, the whole natural thing seems to be someone gets a diagnosis of dementia, so we will, one, lock them away for their own safety, and also lock them away so other people can't see them, I think, is part of the rationale. But also, we don't actually say to that person or look back in that person's history. So if someone used to be on a farm, then they're going to love what you're doing. You're absolutely right. When stuff was available for your grandpa, everybody put someone with dementia in the same box and thinks, well, that'll entertain them.
You know, it's what you said is just so true. And for my grandpa, he had a semantic fluency variation of dementia. So that means that his ability to talk changed a lot. And to your point about that type of segregation, right? That type of, well, people with dementia belong in this sort of setting and not in this setting or out in the public or, goodness, on a farm, right? Working. It's just seemed kind of counter narrative. I have to give a shout out to Dr. Alina Stell. She's actually a UK researcher. So shout out to the UK for a wonderful, brilliant brain. And she does a lot with gerotechnology. But one study she did on adaptive interaction was with people with dementia who couldn't produce speech in the way that you and I are right now. And she worked on ways to communicate with them anyways, anyhow, with the sounds that they could make. And that always stuck with me because I think so many people aren't familiar with the potential of the brain of somebody with dementia. Even though there is some cellular death, there's some atrophy, they are absolutely still able to communicate. They are still able to interact with the world around them. Their senses are still active. They can smell things, they can taste things, touch things, they can hear things. It's just the complex function of speech, hearing, right, comprehension. It's not always accessible, but that certainly doesn't mean that we should stop communicating with them. And so I think the sensory garden is truly a manifestation of that we want them to have lots of sensory stimulus where they're able to engage with the environment around them, but where it's not as hard, as challenging as talking, because someone with dementia knows if the other person thinks, geez, what they just said was funny. That didn't make any sense. You can tell, right, on the face of someone, even if you don't know how to fix it. So I can imagine for people with dementia, it's distressing where they think, oh goodness, I better be quiet now. And that leads to a lot of that, segregation that you're talking about. It's uncomfortable for everyone. But that's a broader, like, public health. We need more dementia-friendly strategy, dementia-friendly work around supporting people with different abilities. But in the meantime, the Care Farm does a good job at that sensory stimulus and a safe place for people with dementia to roam and be themselves and get their hands in the soil and plant things and be productive. We grow food for the food bank, and all of our members love that because just because you have dementia doesn't mean that you don't want to give back and be meaningful, right, in your community. And so there's an opportunity for them to contribute, to give back.
Yeah, that is so important, and I think so undervalued as well at times. Because people will remember, they'll remember smells and touch, and they'll have muscle memory of digging things up with a spade or whatever that will never go away. You had a quite a nerve with me there, because when I was managing activity groups for people living with dementia in the community here, I had one guy who was non-verbal but used to take me round the garden and point all the plants out. And kind of second or third time he did that, I started saying, well, that's a whatever. And he nodded, and we go on to the next one. So, that was amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. And there's so much in the brain that certain experiences can unlock as well. And I think a lot of families, especially, and trust me, I've been there, it's frustrating. They're trying to ask somebody with dementia the same questions the same way, and they're getting the same results. And this is an opportunity and a nature-based opportunity to do something a little different. And your guy, exactly. There's stuff going on in his brain, and he wants you to know that he is checked in, he's paying attention, and he wants to test your knowledge. Do you know what's in the garden?
Yeah, that was
Yeah.
absolutely it. It was a great experience. I get, you know, we're in a difficult world financially and all those kind of things. And sometimes people will require research boxes to be ticked, and that type of approach. And when you've got someone living with dementia who perhaps he's non-verbal, it's difficult to measure in those terms, isn't it?
It is difficult to measure in some terms, and I've been grateful to be involved, peripherally in some research projects and before the care farm in research projects as a research associate, but that's, years ago. So I always thought it was interesting when they're looking for the different types of standardized research assessments to evaluate people. So much of them are on spoken word. So much of them are on spoken word. And if they're not on spoken word, they're on a psychiatric inventory, which is, sort of how we're measuring for behavioral psychological symptoms of dementia. But where's the metric for joy? Where's the metric for social? Where's the metric for friendship, relationship? Like those sorts of components capture some of the positives. So my experience was that some of the psychiatric assessment was deficit-based as well. It was quite negative. It wasn't capturing the goodness in there. I think what I know from the research is that it works, and there are just hundreds of benefits for people with dementia. When it comes to the funding component, of course, I'm going to look to our friends in the Netherlands. I'm not saying Dutch people are perfect. However, they've got it really figured out here, I think. The average person in the Dutch model, from what I understand, spends about 53% of their income in the tax base. And they really, I think they trust that tax base a bit more because they see it in their day-to-day lives. So care farming assessment and the provision of that service, it's part of the home visit assessments that we would do for somebody with dementia who's diagnosed, right? You have someone come to your home, check out your activities of daily living. How are you eating, walking, dressing, bathing, those sorts of things. And then they discuss supports, respite supports. Are you interested in a day program? Are you interested in a day program on a farm? Or would you prefer one in the city center? What activities are more your level? So they have got 50 years of a social fabric that has that private public partnership that makes these things affordable. So there's an economic benefit for the farmer to offer these programs. A lot of the programs will lead to a 24/7 living facility. Excuse me. So I really look to the Dutch model for how they've made that such an integral part of their economy, not just in an expenditure way, but also in a revenue generator for a business owner like a farmer who has a copay from the person and from the government for them to attend. But Pete, they're like 50 years ahead of at least Canada. So I remind, like, 50 years is a long time, right? It doesn't happen overnight. And I think it's important to start somewhere. And in Canada, I think that's proof of concept. We need to see. Yeah. There's a really good UK scholar as well, Robin Asquith. And he did I believe, I hope I don't get this wrong, but he did a fellowship. I think it's a Churchill Fellowship, but I could be remembering that wrong. And it was on care farms. So I'm happy to send you the report. You want to include it in notes for the show. And
And I think, okay, yeah, maybe 50 years in advance, but there's something
yeah.
definite to aim at, and someone that has
Oh, yeah.
actually proved, isn't it, that it all works. And I think, the interesting thing is, I mean, this isn't a medical intervention, fine, but I get this feeling here in the UK that the medical world and the social world want to mix a lot more than they do. And social prescribing here in the UK is kind of in its infancy and just taking off. But this seems absolutely perfect for a social prescribing model.
Totally. Yeah. It's a great example of a social prescription. It's a beautiful example of one. Yes. Yeah. You're prescribing. Oh, go ahead.
Let's say we're coming to Milton. And we're coming to your farm. Take us
I would
through
welcome
a
you.
few of the typical things that we do during the day.
That'd be great. We'd love to have you. So we work in the sensory garden for the majority of the program time. The sensory garden is a half-acre plot on a 165-acre farm. So the group of our guys, our members, we typically set up underneath the gazebo every day. So the tables, the chairs, arrange our stuff where we're going to sit for the day, have a little snack, have a little drink, and then talk about what needs to be done in the garden that day. So we have some casual planning tools, so like a whiteboard tracker, some tasks with some thumbtacks and whatnot to look at the different tasks that need to be completed in the garden over the season. So it changes every week, as you can imagine, as in anybody's garden. Then we work on some of those activities in small groups. So our staffing ratio is 3 to 1. So at any time, you have two or three people hanging out with one of the green care providers, which is the staff role. For our folks who are a bit more busy, so maybe somebody who's a walker, somebody really likes, they have a lot of energy, they might walk for several hours a day. I hear that from families sometimes. We might go for a look and listen walk, which is around the acreage of the farm. So it's 165 acres. That means we leave our sensory garden, shut the gate behind us, and roam in the wilderness of the farm for an hour and a half, and we take in what's around us. So much like your fellow in the program that you were describing, pointing at things and looking at you, right? Like, come on now, what's the word? We'll do a lot of that. So we'll look at an airplane in the sky, hear a bird. And we'll see crops that are getting ready, strawberries, blueberries, and just that immersive experience of going around the farm and looking at things as they change over the season. So just nature's progress and drawing attention to that. So we call that look and listen, always focused on the senses. So at any time, our group is kind of doing one of those two things, maybe a more of a roaming immersion activity or a garden kind of task base. We have a bench, we have a chair, we've got a bucket. We have some gloves on and we're doing something like that. We have lunch together. And then in the afternoon, people are usually tired from the morning. So we do still kind of, I would say that's more puttering in the afternoon after lunch. We're puttering and putting things away, shutting down, and then everyone goes home. That's a typical day in the garden.
That sounds good. Sounds very good to me. And I guess you have a lot of fun in between there as well.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. And I think too, like, I really feel for people with dementia because so much of the time when they're out in public or they're in different social settings, it's hard. There's a lot of people that don't understand the diagnosis. There's very few environments where you can say truly whatever's on your mind, however you produce that, right? Or if not saying, pointing with great enthusiasm in whatever directions, right? You're communicating in the way that you know how. And in our program, we are there to pay attention to that and to respond to that, right? And so you really see a lot of our folks with dementia just, I don't want to say they're all like happy, happy, happy all the time, but you do see a change and you see an opening in their personality. You see more of them as the program goes on and just really beautiful moments while I'm thinking about them. We had one lady who was always dressed to the nines, always beautiful outfits. We're on a farm, but hey, I'm not going to interfere, right? It's the way she is. And when we started making flower crowns, they became an essential accessory for her. And so she would wear the flower crowns, sometimes the same one, a couple of weeks in a row, and we'd freshen it up. And it just brought this huge smile to her face. She also was nonverbal, but she'd always hold her hand out and, hey, I'm ready for a walk. Let's go for a walk. Take my hand. Go for a walk. And the other thing that continues to be very touching, and I look forward to it this year too, is when our members would make bouquets for their care partners. So they would flower arrangements for their care partners, and it's just so beautiful because a lot of those care partners wouldn't have received flowers from their person in a long time. And for a person with dementia, how are they supposed to go out and get flowers for their person? Like, what a difficult thing to do, to go acquire the right place, the right store, right, to buy the flowers from, to do that transaction, that purpose, and then somehow get them back again. And it's really hard to order too. It's very hard to make a flower delivery order. So I love seeing that when their care partners were getting the bouquets and just that moment was, I love that. There's so many moments like this. I could go on forever. But yeah, so that's the evidence that I'm going off of, you know? That's the evidence that, yeah.
That's all anybody needs, to be honest. That level of evidence, and also is you've got a knock-on effect, haven't you? You've got the person living with dementia, having a good time in the farm, rediscovering things, and also you've got a care partner who gets respite, but also meets them again at the end of the day, sees a smile and gets a bouquet. I mean, what's better than that?
Right. Well, sometimes they're vegetables, so they get a bouquet and vegetables. That's what I guess it get a little better. No, but it is. It's something like my grandpa, what he went through. He was so frustrated most of the time. He was so frustrated, right? Really, like, I think there's some books about this and mental health research around it, being kind of that locked inside, like so much going on in his brain. And, you know, he wants to communicate, but he can't. So he was very frustrated a lot of the times. And I think given an environment like this, I think he would have flourished. I think he would have gotten that out of his system, right? That he wanted to work, he wanted to contribute, he wanted to make a difference, he wanted to build things, change things, transform things. And of course, that's going to make somebody happy when they haven't had a chance to do that. So yeah, that's, you know, especially people with dementia, that if you're familiar with the seven A's, one of those A's is apathy. Are you familiar with that? Yeah. So it can look present a lot like depression, indifference, I don't know, I don't care. It kind of looks like that. Even for folks who may be living with apathy, at the end of the day, they are in a better mood than when they got there. It could be the fact that it starts in the morning, ends in the afternoon. That also is a factor. But it does, I think, being in the environment, being immersed in that social setting, and having things to do that you're responsible for, they're yours to do, it's your activities. I think that really contributes to one's sense of autonomy, their sense of identity, that sense of their themselves as a person separate from their care partner, which is just essential. Because how many opportunities do they have for that?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
We've got some great guests lined up for the podcast in the coming months, but there's always more room for you. If you want to tell your dementia story, then we'd love to hear from you. We're on Facebook, X, Blue Sky, and Instagram, and the email is tdwradio@gmail.com. On this edition, I'm chatting to Rebecca Churchard, who founded Canada's first care farm in Guelph, Ontario. You know, it's a great idea, and you're doing a great job in Milton. The big question, obviously, is how do you spread that across the whole country?
Yeah, well, let me tell you what I've been up to. I wouldn't have believed you if you told me this is where I would be in the first year. Okay. So last year, we opened up our satellite location, Jess and John Zufferli. They live in Bruce County, which is about 2 hours north of Guelph. Maybe we'll take you there next time you're visiting. They have a beautiful 90-acre farm, and this is going to be their second season running Meaford Green Care Farm. So that's awesome. That's one direct satellite. In the last 3 years, what I have worked on, I get all these emails, right? How did you do this? How did you start the care farm? Well, just a million questions. And I used to think, oh no, I can't answer these all. I don't have time. What am I going to do? And the problem is the solution, right? So I pulled together what I did in terms of founding the business, creating the program, creating the sensory garden, the stakeholder relationships, the agreement with the farmer, all of those pieces into a course called How to Start a Care Farm. And so I wasn't sure if this was going to meet the need that people were seeking information, but I ran two cohorts as a form of testing. And I asked the people who took the course, did this meet your need? They said, yes, mostly. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but I learned from that as well. And after those two cohorts, we decided to launch an online platform, The Path to Care Farming. What we're calling it. And it's expanded the initial course, How to Start a Care Farm. So from 3 modules into 9 modules, where I slow down, spend more time explaining the concepts to people who want to get started. And all I do, Pete, is I explain what I did. I'm not saying it's the best way, the only way. I absolutely don't think it's the only way, but it's what I did to start it and the different areas of the business that I oversee, right? Which I think most people who are running a care farm would also need to consider. So we have about 5 graduates from the 40 from the two cohorts that are in beginning stages of a care farm. And from that cohort, we also have 2 dementia gardens. So that's reasonably good success. And we've got people who have joined the wait list for the Path to Care Farming. We're still testing the online version. I used to teach it on like Zoom, right? Or Google Meets, but I only offered it once a year, which really isn't very often. So I think people wanted it on demand. So I worked on pre-recording the modules and putting it on the website. So that's it in progress right now. And I hope it
It's
will cause many more.
happening. Most definitely, it's happening. Well, Rebecca, you've summed up what this show's all about, actually. Enthusiasm, caring, and thinking outside the box, which is it's all been put together. I think your grandpa would be really proud of what you've already achieved and what you're going to achieve because, I can tell you're not going to let this go. You're going to build it. And it's been great having you on the show. I'll be over near you in July, and we'd love to pay a visit to the farm there in Milton.
Absolutely.
That would
We would
be
love to have
excellent.
you.
And
Yes.
keep in touch. We'll get you back on the show to see how things have been going. But for now, it's been excellent. Thanks so much for being my guest.
Oh, thank you, Pete, for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much to Rebecca for a fascinating introduction into care farms. There's more information at carefarmscanada.com. I'm really looking forward to paying the Guelph farmer visit later in the year. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.